Our next honoree is Ari Nair. I take extreme personal pleasure to have been able to offer this honor, and even more pleasure that you have accepted to receive it in front of this audience, and more generally audiences of this type. Ari needs no introduction. In a world in which the words public intellectual have become cheapened, and Renaissance men are indeed a nearly extinct species, he's both, and he's so par excellence. In fact, Arya casts a giant shadow in everything that has to do with rights, the protection of the weak and the disadvantaged, the limiting of the power of the state on civil and political rights, and anything that involves issues of fairness and justice writ large. But Ari is also a prolific author, and I must say, from all the things that he has accomplished, this is the one thing that I am most envious about. If I am counting right, an author of 7 long books, I had the pleasure, and it took quite a bit of discipline on my part, to read the last 2 things that he authored. And interestingly enough, books with compelling titles, such as Defending My Enemy, American Nazis in Skokie in Illinois and the Risks of Freedom, or Taking Liberties, 4 Decades in the Struggle for Rights, as well as his brand new book, in fact, less than a month old, The International Human Rights Movement, A History, a book by Princeton and Oxford Universities. Fabulous works, treatises of significance from someone whom, when I'm about to describe what he has done other than writing books, you would say what I say. How could you have found the time to do that? Ari is president of the Open Society Foundations, a position that he has held since 1993, when George Soros created the Open Society Institute to oversee his foundations and promote the development of open societies around the world. With Ari at the helm, OSI tackles some of the toughest issues around the world in the effort to strengthen the rights of individuals. The breadth of what the foundations have accomplished under his leadership is nothing less than astounding. In the immigration arena, ARIA and OSF have worked diligently to expand naturalization, provide needed services for immigrants, and an effort to build capacity among immigrant rights organizations, an effort that started in the mid-1990s with the creation of a $50 million Emma Lazarus Fund. And more recently, through the creation of the Open Society Foundation's International Migration Initiative, now almost 3 years old, the foundation is making a major commitment to protecting migrants around the world. Arya is stepping down from his position at the helm of the organization that he has held for nearly 20 years in July of this year, but we know that he will remain an enduring presence as a defender of rights, as he has been his whole career. And for those of you, and I know many of you know that, but those of you who do not, he started his career as the National Executive Director of the ACLU in the 1960s and 70s, and then as the founder, one of 3 founders, and Executive Director of Human Rights Watch. He held that position until 1993. Next on his agenda, because he always emphasizes to me, and I'm sure to everybody else, that he's not retiring, he's just stepping down. A trip to Paris to teach international, I suspect, rights as a distinguished visiting professor at the Paris School of International Affairs at Sciences Po, one of the Grand Écoles in the French capital. It is my pleasure to welcome and to offer this award to Ariane Nayar.
Thank you very much for that generous introduction. It's a great honor to be recognized here this evening. As I think all of you know, and that's why you're here, the issue of migration is among the most important and most contentious issues of our time. And the role of the Migration Policy Institute as the premier think tank dealing with this issue is of ever-increasing importance. As I stand before you here this evening, I have to, I think, tell you just a little bit about my own experience as a migrant. I was born in Nazi Germany. I was an infant refugee with my parents and my older sister to England. We arrived in England on August 16, 1939, 2 weeks before the outbreak of World War II. And I don't have any recollection of Germany. I was 2 years old when I left. But I do have infant recollections of England. And the war brought out, I think, the very best in the British. And we were treated with extraordinary generosity. First, the fact that we were admitted at that point, which was simply a life-saving gesture by the British. At a certain point, we had a small flat in London, but we were bombed out, and we had to be evacuated. And we were evacuated to a Midlands industrial town, Kettering. It was a boot and shoe manufacturing town. And almost immediately after getting there, a family opened its doors to us, not a well-to-do family. The breadwinner was a bicycle repairman. We lived in that home, and a town councillor who had the appropriate name, Mr. Good, took interest in us, found my father a job. The job was a bit of a distance from where we were living, so he arranged that another family should take us in, this time an insurance agent. And on the basis of the job, my father was able to put together the resources so we got a place of our own. So my experience was that it is possible to have an extraordinary, an extraordinarily positive experience as a migrant, that there is a spirit of generosity that can be elicited. But why it is not elicited at different times and places is, of course, something that one has to wrestle with. The only footnote I would provide to that is that I was in Tunisia last month, and a couple of people in Tunisia said to me very proudly that in the course of the uprising against Gaddafi in Libya, about 200,000 Libyans had fled across the border into Tunisia, and that in every case, they said, the refugees had been accommodated in private homes that were open to them. So it is possible, perhaps even in today's world, to repeat that kind of generosity. I think probably my own experiences contributed to the fact that I have devoted my career to rights. I first became professionally engaged in rights some 49 years ago, but in the last 3.5 decades, I have focused on rights internationally. And though we think about the many cases in which severe abuses of rights take place, I think it's worth pointing out how much of a transformation has taken place during that period. Though the countries of the former Soviet Union and the countries of the former Soviet bloc have in some cases remained authoritarian states, some of them have also become democratic states, and there is nothing like the repression of that earlier period. When I started working on rights internationally, almost all countries of Latin America had military dictatorships that engaged in extreme abuses of rights. Today, they are flawed democracies for the most part, but they are democracies in almost all cases. And the abuses of rights have diminished in enormous ways. The same is true in Eastern Asia. When I got involved in the struggle for rights, countries like South Korea and the Philippines and Taiwan were military dictatorships, and they too were transformed. Probably the countries that have made the greatest progress in rights in the last 10 or 12 years are two large Islamic countries, Turkey and Indonesia. We don't know yet the outcome of the Arab revolutions of the last 16 months or so, and some of them may not go well. At least the country that I visited last month, where this all started, Tunisia, does seem to be on its way to becoming a rights-respecting democracy. And in that case, it would be the first of 22 Arab countries to acquire that kind of political character. There has also been immense progress for rights in West Africa, so that in that region today, countries like Ghana and Liberia and Sierra Leone and the Ivory Coast and Guinea and Senegal have all had democratic transitions and are rights-respecting countries. And the fact that that kind of transformation is taking place today in Africa is enormously encouraging. Unfortunately, some of the greatest pressure to restrict rights today takes place in the parts of the world where rights are best established and where there are the greatest protections for rights. And I think of the United States, and even more than the United States, of the countries of Western Europe, so that countries which were particularly noted as liberal democracies, such as the Netherlands and Denmark and Finland, today have extreme right-wing political parties that are putting significant pressure on the protection of rights. And I would say there are two major issues that are driving this. One is the problem of terrorism, and the other is migration. And sometimes in the minds of those who are putting on the pressure, for the restriction of rights, the two are conflated. So that defending rights in the countries where the greatest protections exist, where rights are best established, becomes an immensely important issue, and it has to be done in the context of the issues that are driving those who seek restrictions on rights protections. It's because these issues are so important, particularly in the places which have led the way for the world as a whole in the protection of rights, that the work of the Migration Policy Institute becomes especially important. One can't solve all the problems of migration by looking at the issue solely from a rights standpoint. There are issues of public policy and good governance that don't involve rights, that have to be in the foreground as one deals with the issue of migration. But there needs to be a rights sensibility in the way in which one addresses all of those issues. One needs to deal with the importance of providing people with equal treatment, with providing people with fair proceedings, due process of law, with dealing with people humanely, with focusing on the issue of integration, as Dimitriou has said this evening, in not visiting the sins of the fathers and mothers upon the children. That kind of rights sensibility has to be in the forefront as we deal with the difficult problems that migration poses in the United States, in Western Europe, and also in many other parts of the world. And it is because I believe that these issues are so significant that I value greatly the work of the Migration Policy Institute, and I express my deep gratitude to those who are responsible for choosing me as the recipient of this award. Thank you very much.
For more information on how to donate to MPI's 10th anniversary, visit www.migrationpolicy.org/celebrate10th event.